Welcome to episode 8 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, back once again, more like stuck once again with my co-host, Matthew Mueller.
We're already there?
Yeah, we're already there. It's episode 8, man. The wrinkles are starting to creep in. But no, I'm just kidding. I love you, buddy. Again, on our rotating series of hosts, while BD is out in the field tucking and rolling and doing a bunch of Captain Marvel stuff for us right now, we have another person in. Last time we had Jamie Lovett. I almost forgot his name because that's the state my mind is in today.
Oof, sorry, Jamie, if you're listening.
Sorry, Jamie. We had Star Trek expert Jamie Lovett, and we had to follow that up with Star Wars expert and what is it? Associate editor? Editor?
I think I'm like Joe Blackman's lackey, I think is
they don't, my official title. Whoa, you are dropping major spoilers. Nobody knows who that is yet. We were just going to introduce him as the dark side of our company.
Jim Viscardi's lackey.
Who just sits in that. His office and like kind of looks at us threatening Omega beams if we don't get these stories up in time. We were going to slowly unroll that mythology. You don't want to do it. I mean, this is just like the Batman versus Superman act. We're going to get into that whole three-act Justice League mess soon. But yeah, so... Secret lackey, I guess he's our Steppenwolf. I think you just named yourself.
Hey, Steppenwolf?
There it is.
Yeah, he's our Steppenwolf here.
I'm okay being a
Steppenwolf. And Star Wars expert, J.K. Schmidt.
Hey, how's it going? It's good to be here.
Okay, so today we are going to get into the first big retiree from the MCU. We're going to talk about maybe one of my favorite casting announcements ever. We're also going to get into some new horror thriller stuff with the kind of comeback of The Twilight Zone from Get Out director Jordan Peele and the new season of Haunting from Hill House. Plus, we're going to get a state of the Star Wars franchise from JK since we have him here.
That's
and since, you know, we're coming up on another weekend, we are going to bring back something from my other podcast that I really love, which are called Rants and Raves, where we take a minute to rant and or rave about something or some things in the entertainment industry we are currently watching and share with you guys in the hopes that you might catch on to it or avoid it like the plague. So that's going to be everything we do today. Thank you for kind of riding with us still. If you want to subscribe, we always post new episodes on the site. You can get an RSS feed subscription there. You can also subscribe on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, everything from like except Amazon Music.
Why? Where, I knew you were going to bring it up.
Because Matt's still pulling for that.
That's the thing.
Maybe, maybe one day. Like I pulled for it.
When another person signs up for it, you maybe will. But for right now, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, subscribe, follow us on social media at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or just talk with each of us. We'll give you our Twitter handles at the end. Let's get into it. So first up today, Gwyneth Paltrow, who plays Pepper Potts to Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man and was one of the first architects to help kick off this whole MCU saga, she's retiring after Avengers Endgame. She is not renewing her contract with Marvel Studios, and she's kind of stepping off to the sun, and she posted a whole reasoning behind it. I mean, it loosely based, it just says, like, she loves Marvel, she has kids, she loves the fantasy and all the things she's done, but she's getting too old, it's not like she can suit up, and, you know, she didn't say it in so many words, but basically she laid out that there's better things for her to be doing with her time and career than playing, you know, the lady interest to Robert Downey Jr. I mean, the whole game has changed. We got Captain Marvel coming. Like, these old phase one love interest things, roles are getting kind of, I would say, dated.
Absolutely.
And so she's moving on. I mean, she's got Goop to run, which is her, unfortunately, titled magazine. And she's got stuff. I mean, she's, like, thinking mogul and making, you know, bigger moves. So, I mean, it is probably time. The only reason we really want to bring this up and talk about it is because of, I mean, I feel bad, but not exactly saying goodbye to Gwyneth Paltrow, which is more like, but what it may imply. It's just kind of hard. We were talking before the show for us to imagine that there's going to be major storylines with Iron Man or like a whole Iron Man movie that wouldn't have Pepper Potts or like Gwyneth Paltrow in it. So it kind of makes us wonder, like, as speculated, will Robert Downey Jr. probably die or take just a smaller kind of step back cameo role in the MCU after Endgame? I personally think I've always thought that's what's going to happen here. I remember the rumors that Marvel was considering an Ironheart movie. I still think that's something that would be kind of on the horizon.
Riri, yeah, buddy.
Yeah, with Riri Williams. And so I think that's my take on it. I want to hear what you guys have to say real quick.
I mean, I agree with that. I think that's the most likely thing. And I also think that's the same way with Chris Evans. And I mean, Hemsworth, I feel like, is the only one kind of that original group that like will go on to continue to make movies built around him. I think the other ones will kind of take that sidestep. They'll be the homecomings, essentially, like where they're a part of it, but they're not. You know, they're there to supply another character.
Yeah, I mean, just to root this in our comic book geekery, like Tony Stark, something like head of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like that.
Yeah, you see him pop up and everyone, it gets a pop. Yeah. He's a wrestling term. But, you know, and then after that, it's like, nah, it's cool. Yeah, we like that. And she wasn't the biggest. I mean, she was the best part of Iron Man 3, which to me is a cluster. I don't like the movie at all. But I think she was one of the best parts of it.
I think Iron Man
3
is all right.
Yeah, like but I liked her in that movie, but I don't see her taking that much of a spot.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice. I mean, it would be nice. She would still have the respect if she ever pops up in a cameo. Like, everybody would get up in, like, a surprise cameo. Yeah, everybody would be, like, cheering for that and be, like, really thrilled by that, right?
Yeah. And she left the door open. She left the money door open. Hey, I'll be up.
That dump truck.
Yeah, that dump truck
comes through. Like, yeah, you never know. Well, which I like to coin the term that I did coin that term a long time ago. This whole dump truck full of money concept.
Was that you?
Yeah, that was actually me. I did come. It was about Christian Bale. It was when The Dark Knight Rises came out, and we were all thinking about like what Batman was going to be, and it was a whole question of whether it would continue. And I just would yell about how anybody would like change their values for that dump truck full of money. But anyway, JK
they pretty much set it up. Basically, they kind of like set the prototype with Spider-Man Homecoming in how Robert Downey Jr. could show up and what kind of capacity he could have in the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so if they're going to do something with Iron Man in the future, it makes sense that they would not do an Iron Man 4 because Gwyneth Paltrow would not have any involvement with it. She's not going to take on a bigger role. So, and those three Iron Man movies were pretty much revolved around the relationship of Pepper Potts and Tony Stark. So how do you do Iron Man 4 while kind of sidelining her?
Yeah.
You know, you can't really do that justice. Yeah.
I mean, I've thought that ship has sailed for years. I mean, I think
definitely,
it's going to be.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we're all in agreement. So it's going to be fun. You know, thank you, Gwyneth. I mean, she was a great Pepper Potts. I mean, that first Iron Man, the chemistry with her and Robert Downey Jr. still charming to this day.
Who has the red dog to pour out one for Pepper? No one?
No. But yeah, we wish her the best. And yeah, we're looking forward to that cameo. I'm sure all of us will be one day when she pops up. Moving right along to a awesome piece of other Marvel star casting news.
This made the day in the office.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was freaking out.
This was huge.
Chris Hemsworth, Thor himself, is switching from the role of Thor to the Hulk. But not the way you think. He's playing Hulk Hogan, a young Hulk Hogan in a Hulk Hogan biopic.
I like what he did there with the twist.
Thor Hulk. I stole that from the internet. Somebody else more clever than me came up with that. But I stole it.
I was giving you credit.
I know. Yeah. I just didn't. I don't like myself enough to accept it.
Stolen valor. Over here.
Yeah, so Chris Hemsworth is playing a young Hulk Hogan. We're not going to go too deep into this except to say I think this is awesome. I've already been tweeting at Chris Hemsworth to play, or Chris Evans to join in as the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, God, you too?
Yeah, I just want to see crazy Marvel people pop up in like weird wrestling cameos.
You know how mad Charlie's going to be. He's going to go from like a 15 to a 12 after he hears
this. I know. But Matt's a wrestling expert, so I'm going to throw this one over to you.
That's awesome. I didn't know I was an expert.
Well, I mean, of the people sitting here.
That's fair. That's more accurate.
In comparison.
That's more accurate. I'm stoked for this. I think this is, let's just say it's been a rough few years for Hulk Hogan. And I think this is like the best news his camp could get, right? Like he's going to get a movie by someone who's like in a very good light with Hollywood. It's like a rising star. He's been in all the Avengers movies and then they're going to make him look really good.
Who he predicted to play him.
Right.
Yeah. Said, yeah, this guy.
And he's already been kind of sort of like WWE and him have a very like, you know, you're over here. We're kind of associating with you, but not. This is great for him. I imagine they're having margaritas or something.
Producer Jim Viscardi before the show made sure to set you up to die on the internet. He wanted you to add one note about this.
What and I did it? Not, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Then he told me to write with the joke. He said no.
All right. Well,
I'm my own person, Jim.
Put it in.
But basically, it's that. It's just, does a young Hulk Hogan really look like Chris Hemsworth?
Oh, hell no.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
There it is.
I'm curious. I cannot wait to see the balding look.
You know what? No, Chris. I'm more excited for the return of the bleached eyebrows, to be honest.
Oh,
from Thor,
that's right.
When he had his weird bleached eyebrows.
Are they going to do it?
Why would you not?
Wait till we have to write the article about how there's a secret Thor Easter egg in the Hulk Hogan biopic.
I cannot wait to see.
Jim already put that in a sauna.
A Hemsworth promo. Because it's going to be all the over-the-top cheese that is Hulk Hogan. and I will eat it up with a spoon.
I hope there's Marvel character, I mean, other Marvel actors cameos, and I hope that the other Hemsworth brothers get worked into this somehow.
Somehow.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you see the Barr brothers doing like a wrestling thing. Would that be great?
It's not going to be like a WWE type movie. It's going to, like, they've shown.
They're going to touch on it.
They're going to touch on it. They'll show like 30 seconds of a promo.
You're
going to
see Hemsworth, some brother. Like, you're going to see all that.
The movie's going to be like The Wrestler, Beyond the Mat, whatever.
Well, hopefully not as sad, but yeah.
And probably not as sad as The Wrestler.
The steroid stuff is going to make it. How much of the, you know, like the drug stuff and the alcoholism stuff that we
will this be the Bohemian Rhapsody of wrestling?
He's a consultant, probably, on the project.
Oh, that's never good.
Yeah. So, like,
it's like straight out of comedy.
You're not going to see any of the race stuff. You're not going to see any of that. You
Eric
might
Bischoff
see,
too. Eric Bischoff is a consultant, which is a little.
Which makes me.
Will they
happy.
Lean into like the darkness of it? Yeah.
So there's a lot.
So
of cool
again,
stuff here.
So people, self-serving biopics from people who are still alive are all the rage, and this will be another one. All right, moving right along. We're going to go to some darker places. We're going to talk some horror. So we got our first look at the trailer for the CBS All Access reboot of The Twilight Zone.
Which looks awesome.
Yeah, which does look awesome. I mean, it looks, I don't know how many people out there are still Twilight Zone fans of like the kind of younger generation, but I mean, I came in at the tail end when that was still very popular, that original series, and then the remake movie in the 80s with Shatner and There's Something on the Wing was right around the time I really got into kind of became a film geek.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really happy because I love these kind of, I mean, I love horror, sci-fi anthologies. Yeah.
I came up
period.
On Outer Limits, which was
Outer
Twilight
Limits
Zone,
was another one.
Really
same here. And I love that stuff. And even just like X-Files episodes, like standalones that were kind of weird in a kind of Twilight Zone-y way or a horror way. So I'm really excited for this. There's it's a great looking cast of people that they show off in this promo. Adam Scott looks like he has a great episode. Sanaa Lathan, and a bunch of other people who I'm blanking on right now. But I trust people like Jordan Peele involved. I trust kind of what the tone that we got, which is kind of weird. I mean, I like it that it's a mix of kind of horror, modern horror, but also the kind of old school sci-fi. Weird concept conundrums, Twilight Zone, and I very much enjoy that, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think Jordan Peele has kind of already proved that he can do really short, contained stories just in Key and Peele skits. Yeah. You know, the Gremlins skit that he did a while ago, the Gremlins 2 skit was just it shortened in and of itself was perfect, and then obviously his mastery over building tension and creating mythology with Get Out was just. That was masterful. He got Oscar nomination for it. So I think it's pretty telling that this trailer obviously looks as great as a lot of people are expecting it to be. Like, there was nothing disappointing about it. The Adam Scott stuff looked really good. The Steven Yeun stuff looked really good.
That stuff looked really good.
Tracy Morgan's in a Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was in this, by the way. And so when he showed up,
I think it's more from his autobiography because Tracy Morgan is like an escapee of
the he's a weird dude.
Which is really cool, like that they're kind of like shattering the notion that comedy actors cannot do drama or horror. Yeah. And I mean, obviously Kumail Nanjiani and The Big Sick prove that he has great range. And so it's really exciting to see that he's giving a lot of people known for their comedic talents a chance to shine in
and
a different
spotlight. AVP MVP. Sanaa Lathan.
That's where she's from. AVP.
Yeah.
Which is actually like a really good movie.
Yeah, we'll
I mean,
get into
it's
that
shitty,
one day about
it's
how
good.
Underrated AVP the first
It is.
Movie.
It is good.
If so that good. Disagree, I mean, we think we're all in for The Twilight Zone. It's coming out April, CBS All Access. If you're a fan, I mean, they're adding a good. We just kind of stumped for Star Trek Discovery last time Jamie was here. So that's a good sci-fi entry. That's a good horror entry. And it seems like they're trying to build some programming and, you know, they got our attention. So moving right along to something that already got everybody's attention, and that was The Haunting of Hill House last year. We got an update from Netflix today about The Haunting of Hill House Season 2. And basically, there's a lot of interesting things happening with this franchise. If you didn't see it, the first season, Haunting of Hill House, was about a family who grew up in this house that was haunted. And it kind of took place between when they were kids and when they were adults. And it was about all this drama that happened in their family. It was basically like a horror version of This Is Us.
Wow, I've never heard it described that way.
I mean, that's like how everybody described it when it first came
out. I'm totally oblivious.
But, personally, I thought it was very well done. I didn't think the family drama overrode. But this thing is getting stretched out and becoming an anthology series, like we were just talking about. And it's going to be The Haunting, will be the proper title of the anthology. And the season 2 anthology will be called The Haunting of Bly Manor. And basically, Bly Manor is a setting from a novel by Henry James called The Turn of the Screw, which is a kind of gothic horror piece of literature. And in The Turning of the Screw is about a governess who comes to this haunted place called Bly Manor, and while she's taking care of the two orphans who are kind of living there. And she begins to think that the house is haunted by spirits and that the children might be ghosts themselves. And there's a question as to whether she's kind of crazy, mentally ill, or is there something supernatural happening? So you can kind of guess about, you know, why this would be appealing to the makers of Haunting of Hill House. Because Haunting of Hill House has, I mean, the haunting, they basically have this formula where they're taking horror but making it walk a line with some other kind of dramatic or genre type deal. And this one would be, from the sounds of it early on, would be a psychological horror about whether this stuff is really happening or is a person just kind of having a slow breakdown. I don't know if it'll be a period piece or something like that, but I just kind of get the sense that they would approach it as you giving you a complex main character who may or may not be crazy.
Yeah. It's kind of what, ironically, it's kind of what Glass tried to do a little bit in that like second act of like trying to make you believe that it was like they were not correct, like they were superheroes, and it's, you know, when it's executed well, I think.
No, I mean, this sounds like, I mean, this is kind of like, sounds to me like a throwback to a lot of those like female-led horror movies from the early 2000s, like What Lies Beneath. What's the one with Nicole Kidman? Oh man, The Others. Yes, yeah. The Others and What Lies Beneath, which were both the same kind of concept.
Lies Beneath is the Michelle Pfeiffer, Harrison Ford one.
I dug that one.
Exact same concept, and it works in for women for a different reason. I mean, it's a metaphor about, you know, is it female hysteria? Because there's always some main character being like, "You're just hysterical. Yeah. We don't know if you're real." And then it turns out,
great staple.
Like, you know, yeah, and like in What Lies Beneath, it turns out the husband's a scumbag who did all this crazy stuff,
gaslighting his wife, and the wife's.
It's like a metaphor for a wife being able to send, and all so on and so forth. So we're kind of excited about that. I loved Hill House. How about you guys? You excited for this new kind of take on it?
So, you know, for me personally, I fell asleep the first couple times I tried to watch Haunting Hill House. I work late and I have kids and I put on a show that's really moody and atmospheric and all of a sudden I'm...
That's fair.
But I really like the implications that it has because, really my favorite kind of horror stories are ghost stories and haunting stories. Like, It Follows is one of my favorite horror movies. The Conjuring is a very classic franchise, you know, for being as by the numbers as it is. And this really kind of sets the stage for another cool horror anthology to move in different directions. Because, I mean, when I heard that they were going to pretty much go with the title scheme of The Haunting, and this one's called The Haunting of Bly Manor, like, I'm kind of excited for what the future of that represents because they can do The Haunting of a person, The Haunting of this object, The Haunting of another house. Yeah, it's not. And they're doing it again, kind of setting the format for it, that it's going to be another setting. It's in a really probably cool gothic looking location that is going to be very beautiful on the screen, kind of like how The Haunting of Hill House was. But they have a lot of leeway to go in any direction that they want with it. And I think that's pretty exciting.
I want to see The Haunting of like Family Dollar. Like, I want to see, like, I want to see a haunting of like a really bright.
You
want to
see that? Just go there on a weeknight.
like the haunting of CVS. Like,
go to Walmart.
Very different.
Go to Walmart at 2 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. That's already. They already have that series.
It's go to the sporting goods section.
It's a real life series. On that note, since Matt just shut down that discussion utterly, let's keep moving on.
It's a really good way to move on, though.
Yeah. Stay tuned because when we come back, we're going to rant a rave about something we've been watching lately. And JK is going to give us a state of the Star Wars address very quickly.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. So now that we have JK here, he is one half of our Star Wars experts. I'll make you share that with Patrick just because I know that'll make you internally furious.
No.
That kind of thing.
Patrick Kavanaugh does a great job. He's just not as handsome as I am. So
you're such an instigator on today's show.
Oh, he knows it, though. I know. He knows it. Also, I don't have a Dr. Pepper tattoo, and true story.
Does he really?
Patrick Kavanaugh has a Dr. Pepper tattoo.
Oh, good lord.
It's pretty cool.
I mean, we have him into a podcast.
Yeah, we're veering. We could unpack that for hours.
No, that's good. I like to give the people a little hint of our internal company drama as we go along.
Yeah, of course.
As much as Jim allows me to before those pieces
he's get doing the cutoff. Yeah. He's doing that cutoff thing right now. Like, please.
But JK, take us through. There's some stuff happening with Star Wars. I mean, we've talked about episode 9.
You guys have done a great job.
Yeah, so let's.
You guys have done a great job of running through.
We're talking about Star Trek expanding its franchise, and you know, to instigate further, Star Wars isn't going to be outdone, not on the TV screen.
Well, I mean, it's like a recent comeback. I mean, let's be honest. But I mean, like, yeah, you guys have pretty much gone through episode 9. Don't expect the title until around Celebration for Endgame. A trailer probably around that time. We know The Mandalorian's coming out. They just recently wrapped filming on that. So Jon Favreau's show is going to hit Disney Plus whenever. It's probably be like the flagship show that hits. We do know Cassian Andor is going to get his own little
Rogue
One. Which
is what
one.
I'm so excited about. Because I'm the guy. To all my Rogue One lovers out there, I stand with you. I stand with you.
Yeah, I know. We like don't see.
No.
We see eye to eye on some things.
You
but
like Rogue One?
I don't really like the grim and gritty version of Star Wars. And I understand a lot of people do. Like, a lot of kids grew up on it. They like the more mature version. That for me, that's just not what I'm into,
personally. I also just love Cassian Andor. As I don't think that movie did enough with him. Because I think, in a weird way, I think he was
like
more interesting.
Like, develop a personality
focus.
For him? Yeah,
no, I thought it did. I thought I actually think he would have been a better focus. Because that kind of movie, I like this character about a guy who started off trying to do something good. Has just kind of gone down that espionage route of like where is up? I've compromised myself. I mean, he has the most Han Solo introduction when he just shoots that informant, and like kills him. He's kind
it's
of
a lot
like
darker,
straddling.
But yes, it
yeah,
was
straddling the line of that, and then he has to kind of come back to something more noble than that. And I thought just seeing how the compromise happened is kind of a weird Star Wars Breaking Bad style like descent into something dark.
Which if you want that, I don't really want that in a Star Wars. I'm excited for K2SO. I really think like he's one of my he was probably the character I like the most in
Yeah,
Rogue
I mean
War.
He's been yeah,
but K2 there's does. But see like now they're and Lucasfilm is very they keep all their cards close to their vest or chest, whatever you want to say it.
I never know.
Yeah,
I alternate.
You Google it.
I assume it's
what is the phrase?
Yes.
Yeah. No, but yeah, that's a good way to put it in this situation. But like, so they have a tendency to announce projects themselves that are for sure coming out. Like everyone thought
this DC.
Obi-Wan movie was coming out, and they kind of like a Boba Fett movie and all that shit and they stuff, and they put the hammer down on all of it, you know, and. So now a lot of new stories, a new series have come out that are rumored for Disney Plus. And let's just run through a list. And real quick, you just say yes or no. Blurt it out as soon as I say it. And you say yes or no.
Oh, I broke this down already.
I know. Yeah. So Young Princess Leia.
Nope.
Nope.
Captain Phasma.
Nope.
Knights of Ren.
Yep.
Rose Tico.
Nope.
Darth Bane.
Yep.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yep.
Lando Calrissian.
Nope.
Yes.
Which is probably not true. Kira.
Nope.
So these are all
no,
the things.
No, maybe Kira.
No, Lando?
No, he wasn't interesting in Solo. Like, Lando's a great side
Yeah, but if you build
character.
A different kind of show around him, or a movie, I'd be down for
it. I love episodes of Lando in the animated series. They're great. Like, they're great.
But that's also because, like, Billy Dee Williams has that sweet charm. Where he's
just
like,
him
hey,
just kind of, like, smoothly just swaggering his way through every situation is great. But I don't think you could sustain it for a whole show where you have to, because you'd have to show many sides of him and you'd have to be vulnerable. He'd have to be unsure. And that's just not Lando. Like, that doesn't make it fun to me.
All right.
Well, really, any of those characters, I feel like you can't really sustain a show off of. Princess Leia would be cool because you could do like the whole burgeoning of the rebellion and showing her balancing her life as a royal to being a rebel. But really, like, I'm not super interested in that.
Can I take a note back? I say no to Phasma, but I actually would because
I think Phasma would be pretty.
That character holds promise that they never explored.
And like, really, like, so the problem with The Force Awakens is that it kind of just reset the stage of the entire Star Wars universe. You know, like as cool as it was, but it was still like, hey, Return of the Jedi never happened. The Empire still exists. The Rebels still exist. A Darth Vader-like character still exists. So like. there's a lot of questions that fans have into, like, how did the First Order even come up? And a cool way to do that would be with the Phasma thing or a Knights of Ren story. But even the Knights of Ren, like, we only know them in name in this weird, like, rainy flashback that is meant to invoke more questions.
Justice League's nightmare sequence.
Exactly. If, like, it seems so cool.
Bad. Oh, my God.
But it was very poor in execution. To me, personally, like, I didn't care anything about that.
Well, I cared, but then, like, not, I actually cared a lot about that flashback, and then it's just been nothing.
Yeah.
It's
become nothing.
Which is a problem with what I think, like, with a lot of the things that The Force Awakens did was it's kind of just, like, regressive Star Wars stuff, because, like, the first Star Wars movie came out, and it was just like, hey, your dad was a great pilot. These things called the Clone Wars happened. The Old Republic was dissolved. And that's it. Like, these are things that happened, and here you go. You're going to go and go off on this great adventure, and it's not that you're anyone significant in the galaxy. It's just that you are you. And then Empire Strikes Back happens, and you go through that entire movie thinking that same thing until the very end you realize, oh, yeah, this is Darth Vader's son. And that raises new implications. Whereas The Force Awakens, from the opening, it's just like, hey, here's a bunch of cool mysteries. And we're going to solve these eventually. And
really, well, that's like, a very JJ thing.
Yeah, it's a JJ thing, but it also kind of set up a lot of things like where that's not what Star Wars is to me. Star Wars is
It's not supposed to. I mean, I've written about this. It's not supposed to Shyamalan you.
Exactly. Like, and so why do I need a series to go and explain these things when it's really just poor storytelling from the get-go, you know,
like, from the ones that we're hearing might the series that could come about. I mean, I guess I'm tied to the darker people, but I like the Knights of Ren because I think fleshing that out would be really interesting in kind of a dark side collective that's not the Sith. We haven't really seen that before in the dynamics of that, of just seeing people like that who are connected but could be at each other's throats trying to complete something would be interesting. Darth Bane, I want because
I know you want to connect that time period
to what the Game of Thrones guys. I think that would be a great entryway into that time, ancient period, like a millennium before the, you know, the prequels, and just seeing how the Sith came back from their collapse, the rule of two, and this guy who made it all happen, and then have the Game of Thrones creators trilogy movie kind of be set in that same time period where we are more familiar. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I think that's the consensus of what they're going to do. Everyone believes that they're going to do some Knights of the Old Republic type thing.
Yeah, I mean, really, it doesn't have to be specifically that, but that era would be interesting because there's so much interesting lore around that early, that transitional time between the fall of Sith Empire to what we know now.
But don't you think that sets up like a weird expectation of them that they have to tackle that when there's already so many beloved stories that are tied to that era?
It's definitely me typecasting. I mean, but I just don't think Hollywood's that imaginative. I think somebody sees Game of Thrones and was like,
those two
with lightsabers. They're like,
I get that. Yeah.
That's like how a pitch meeting goes in my mind. So, but you sold me on Kira. I would also, I mean, I just think, again, for the espionage reason, for the same reason that I like Cassian Andor, it's just like, her playing, well, the character didn't get that fleshed out. I mean, her most interesting thing is in the last 10 minutes of Solo. Where you're like, wait, she's a ninja this whole time?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why was all this? And then, like,
I can see
she's a conspiring crime lord slash ninja. And you're like, well, this would have been better throughout this whole movie. Like, but I would like to see more of, like, her and what happened to her and what she did. And Emilia Clarke's a good enough actress.
Yes.
I threw the enough in there.
Good enough. No, she's great. Yeah. She's great in what she's been getting. Like, I mean,
pull that off.
Let's ignore Terminator, but let's
she wasn't a problem. We can ignore that. So that's just me. But let's wrap it up with maybe what you guys, which ones you guys really want to see.
To be honest, like, none of those. None of those sound super exciting. Cool. I know. But the thing is I love Star Wars enough that if you can convince me, I'm not going to just go into it hating it. I don't know what I want, to be honest. I want it's Star Wars. That's the coolest thing about it is that it can go in so many different directions. So I don't really have. I'm not making these shows, so I can't really say. Like, I want
made a real impression on you.
Oh yeah, I know. I did my
kid with a mop?
Be still. Like,
this is everything I wanted. No, I'm just kidding.
Everything I didn't know I wanted.
I mean, I'm looking forward to Rian Johnson's next trilogy.
Definitely.
My want.
Is that Matt Mueller CB? All you last Jedi.
I love The Last Jedi. And I think it's the most interesting. I mean, I agree with him in a lot of ways. Yeah.
It's only Brandon, we'll throw him under the bus. It's only Brandon who's a hater.
I also want an Illumination Entertainment Porg movie. That's what I really want.
Okay.
They already exist. Just go watch Minions.
No, I want them to take on the Porgs and have little personalities.
It's the same thing.
Moving right along, because time is tight. Let's move right along. So this is going to be Rants and Raves, where we each rant or rave about something we've been watching and share it with you guys. I'm going to start, and I'm going to kind of share this one with JK, because we have some crossover here, which is a rare thing, but here we are.
This is pretty sad. Do we rant or rave at this part?
We'll start out with a shorter one. I'm going to rant about the ending of Counterpart, which was the Starz espionage series, sci-fi high concept series, about how our reality kind of, through an accident, creates a mirror reality. But through the interactions those two realities have, the first ones, they kind of quickly diverge, and one universe becomes very different than the other. And basically, they set up this uneasy political truce where there's one doorway between worlds, and there's two agencies, secret agencies, that manage this secret. And then this whole bunch of espionage plot, terrorist plot thing kind of kicks off between the two worlds. And yeah, it wraps season two, where it wrapped up everything in a nice bow, but then throughout this major kind of twist at the end that would set up a grenade and then slam the door on you. Yeah,
you
know? And it was just like, so we're sorry, we're never going to solve this, and just like close the door on us. But it starred J.K. Simmons, Olivia Thirlby.
Williams,
not Thirlby. Man, she's a dread actress.
Olivia
Williams, who was excellent, and a lot of other excellent actors that I didn't know before this character, actors that I didn't really see before the series, but kind of know and love now. And yeah, I mean, it was that series. I didn't write about it a lot, but it was my personal pleasure. But like every episode was like a well done movie, very good drama, suspense, characters that you could attach to, and J.K. Simmons is fantastic. And it was great because these were really fantastic actors who, for the most part of the out of the cast, had to play at least like two roles. And it was excellent. And it started out in first season as just kind of a high concept, but in season two, it really smoothed out into something a lot more interesting, definitely, with a lot more interesting mythos and backstory that actually was very satisfying. And so it was a big loss, and JK and I would talk about it because we were both regular watchers, and I hope it gets saved. I really do.
Same here.
I think it would be great for a streaming service. Like, I think it would be great on Amazon to give Prime some shout-out for you, Matt.
Hey, there you go. Yay.
And I think it would be great, and I hope it gets picked up somewhere else for at least another season, because there is more story to tell, and I hope it wraps up.
Yeah, agreed. It was really wonderful. It was probably one of my favorite shows other than
Killing. I mean, it was critically acclaimed. I mean, let's just put it out there. Ratings weren't the highest, but it was critically acclaimed. It was like
on Starz, though? I mean, like...
Yeah, I know. That's
the bar?
Yeah.
Power. Power is the bar.
Yeah. Like, Veronica Mars was
Outlander and
Outlander, Power. That's it. Yeah, those are the bars right there.
It really became down to it that Starz didn't want to pay for it because they didn't own it. That's what it came down to.
Yeah, exactly.
So hopefully they
There's a lot of that going around Marvel Netflix. So there's a lot of that going around right now.
It's true.
So get your hashtag started. Bring back Counterpart.
Hashtag save Counterpart.
And here's the thing, dude. All your hashtags have to say it twice. Bring back Counterpart. Bring back Counterpart.
It's worked how many times now, though?
Yeah, a lot.
It's worked a lot more.
No, I feel like it's worked a lot less than it has.
Right, Brooklyn Nine-Nine kind of had a campaign. So did Lucifer. So did these shows are finding their way back.
What was that? What was that Skeet Ulrich show? Oh man, where they sent all the peanuts? Jericho.
Yes. Okay.
If they can bring back Jericho, my grandparents' favorite show. Yeah, if they can bring back Jericho for another season, we should get another Counterpart.
Not leave it right there.
I'm going to rave about the new Netflix series Umbrella Academy, based on the comic book series. I didn't read the comics. I'll let anybody else up here who read the comics.
I haven't either.
Did you? JK?
I have not.
Okay.
So we've all watched the show.
Jim Viscardi is like our resident My Chemical Romance fan. So we should like.
Really? I didn't know that about you.
He's the, yeah, he's
Megan's also a big Umbrella Academy person.
But Yeah, so the comic was written by Gerard Way. The series was like co-created with Gerard Way, who helped out.
Is that a guy I should know?
He's the lead singer of My Chemical Romance, and you're going to get added. Your mentions are going to blow up.
I checked out of the early 2000s. But yeah, so it's
him and Gabrielle Bob did the comic series, and it's very critically acclaimed, but it's very much like in the vein of Grant Morrison style comics.
Yeah, it's like kind of like X-Men meets Fantastic Four style.
And I watched the first episode, and I was sold as soon as she plays her violin solo.
Her piano.
But she does the Phantom of the Opera, overture, and I was just like, this show is pretty damn good.
And they have dance sequences throughout. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just want to rave about it because it was well done, and I was kind of skeptical because after seeing Doom Patrol and, like, Deadly Class, I was just like, is there still room for something like Umbrella Academy, this kind of quirky comic book adaptation, I'll frankly say with some hipster overtones, like, will it be good? And it turned out to be really good. The cast is really good. The guy who plays Klaus is, like, probably one of my favorite characters of recent years.
He's pretty funny, yeah.
And I've seen the whole thing, and from start to finish, it's a really good, tight tale. Sets things up for a good continuation. And if you're looking for something to stream or binge or something really good just to kind of fall into right now, Umbrella Academy is good. It has, like, X-Men's Ellen Page, Mary J. Blige, who's surprisingly good.
I haven't got to her yet, but I'm very excited.
Her role
about
as an assassin in this.
She's a better actor than she is a rapper.
How dare you?
You better chill out.
What? She wasn't a great rapper.
Yeah, we gotta keep it moving, so I don't have time to even tear you down about Queen of
Arms. More drama. I respect her as a singer.
The answer is yes. Okay. So check out Umbrella Academy.
That was a question. It wasn't a judgment.
My God. Like, okay. Moving right along. We're gonna throw it to Matt Mueller.
My segues again kill.
Yeah.
I'm
raving about Umbrella Academy. Check it out and bring back Counterpart.
All right, so mine is WWE flavor, kind of tying into our Hulk Hogan discussion. Over the weekend, Elimination Chamber took place, big pay-per-view that, it's funny, when you describe it out loud, it sounds a lot like the Royal Rumble, but it's not. When I describe the Royal Rumble, I was like, hey, it's a bunch of dudes, go to the ring, and they all come out.
If you say a bunch of people oiled up, slapping,
bring
like
back
wrestling.
War games.
But, okay, so one of the things, this will be a rant. Because Vince McMahon, who's always saying things that will get the community pissed off in like half a second, recently, now this is a rumor, is from Dave Meltzer, who is kind of a respected WWE industry insider. So according to a rumor, he heard that Vince McMahon essentially said they called up a bunch of NXT people recently and had them come in at Raw and SmackDown and just... no announcement, just like show up and like take part in matches. They all won, so they got a clean, like they really pushed them, right? People were like, well, that's got just out of nowhere. Well, evidently, he said he did it because the current roster, none of them are going to be superstars. Essentially saying like anyone who's over already is over, and all the people who we've been trying to push and build, it ain't gonna happen. So now we need new blood, which that's asinine when you look at who their top person is now as far as how over they are, which is Becky Lynch. And we've talked about her on the show before, right? Who for years has been in mid-card obscurity, just getting a win here and there, but then being used to job out to somebody else as they build somebody else up the ladder. And has just been sitting there for years. And then finally gets a chance to really show what she can be. And gets an actual, like, goes out there and actually shows, like, hey, I have personality. Hey, I can do a killer promo. I'm great in the ring. And all of a sudden, she's huge. People are calling her, right, that this generation's Stone Cold. You can get into some arguments about that, which me and Connor in the office have already done. But that is there, right? That's one person. There's tons of people on this roster that are just like that. They haven't been given a real shot. They've been buried by bad booking, or they've been buried by stupid gimmicks that never got over, or heel turns that they don't follow through on. Like, there's so many things to getting a star over in the WWE. So I think that's really asinine, shows kind of how reactionary they can be, as opposed to really taking a pragmatic look at it and saying, like, well, let's really devote some time and effort and genuine things. And then you have NXT, on the other hand, that's able to seemingly do it every week with stars that don't have the name recognition that these stars have. And you're just like, why can't you do that, right? So in this, there is one star on the current roster that I have a prediction to make. So in 20, I'm predicting and record this so that you can call me on it in a year if we're still on in a year. I hope we are. 2020, Finn Balor will be the next Becky Lynch. We're going to look back and go, oh my God, Finn Balor, who right now is doing the exact same thing that Becky Lynch was doing for so long. Just they try and people are like, he's got it. He's got the entrance. He's got all this stuff, but they just can't find the right pieces for it. He's going to be Becky Lynch of 2020. And they're going to, at some point in time, it's going to click and he's going to be a superstar. I'm calling it right now.
Producer Jim Fiscardi, for the record, says you are a crazy person.
Calling it right, because that's what this whole office said about Becky Lynch. I brought her up in this office. No, I'm telling you, he's not.
And I think we're going to wrap it up there. This is our first official office prediction that's made it onto this show.
Sticking by it.
So everybody riding with us here at Comic Book Nation, put this down because we will revisit this.
Oh, yeah, we will play the audio.
2020,
sure.
We will revisit this.
And if I'm wrong, look, I got to eat it. But I'm saying I don't think I am.
All right. Well, we'll leave it right there with Matt's bold prediction for 2020. Finn Balor, you heard it. Mr. Jim Fiscardi shaking his head. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Again, we will post new episodes on the site where you can listen. We also have links to our RSS feed where you can subscribe, as well as links to Stitcher, Spotify, and iTunes where you can subscribe. You can
forget Google Music.
Yeah, no.
Not
Amazon. Amazon Music.
Oh, man. We can always find me, Kofi Outlaw, on Twitter, at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Mueller CB.
You can find me at Woe Is Joe if you want to see me talk about the Utah Jazz more than I probably should.
James Harden is the best. He also tweets that a lot.
Oh my goodness.
Anyways.
You guys have been good for checking out the show, but we also could use some reviews. So we've made this claim on the last episode. We'll make it again. We are looking for the best review of the show. And when we find it, we are going to take the best review, we are going to read it on air, and the person who wrote it will get a free comic book t-shirt. So, you could get some free swag for just going in, and if you've been riding with us on this journey, please do leave your thoughts and give us a good review. And the best one, like we said, we will read it on the air, and you will get some free swag.
Bow, bow, bow. That was just for
see,
you.
See?
We read the reviews.
The review sounds said like no bride. More fake air horns.
We read them.
This is why we're going to lose the people.
One star, no more air horns. Free tier.
For those of you who are still left after that little hijink by Matt Mueller, thank you for riding with us again at Comic Book Nation, and we'll see you next time.
Deuces.